This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Before we get into today's episode, we would like to acknowledge and pay respects to the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional owners of this land. We pay our deepest respects to the elders, past and present, and to the next generation we hope to create a different future for.
The best career advice that you are not getting is to invest.
Hello and welcome to Your In Good Company's Founder Series.
Last episode of the Founder Series.
Woohoo!
I know we had a bit of a break as well.
What? Did anyone notice?
Did you guys notice that we've actually had like 4 weeks off? But it was on purpose because I'm up in Sydney.
Woohoo! And that is because
we have Vogue Codes this weekend.
Mads, for anyone that doesn't know. Conference.
Yeah, for anyone that doesn't know what that is, what is it?
I'm actually so excited. So it's a day run by Vogue and it's all about bringing together women in STEM or people who want to be in STEM. And they've got, I think, 25 or more than 25 speakers from all over Australia and also the world, one of which is the incredible Dr. Julia Reisler, who we are so fortunate to be speaking to today. I'm so excited for you guys to hear this episode. Honestly, her business is like nothing that I've ever heard before.
Maddie and I were sitting here like, what? Wait, people do this for their job.
I know. It's and then we're having a bit of an existential crisis.
But no, Julia will be speaking at Vogue Codes. Unfortunately, the event has sold out.
You can get on the wait list though.
But yeah, I was going to say you can get on the wait list and I guess promotion for 2024.
Yeah.
If this is an episode that you really enjoy, then just mark in your calendar that maybe in May next year.
Don't miss out.
Just put a calendar in my Vogue Codes.
All right, let's get into it. Dr. Julia Reisler is the co-founder and CEO of Ulu. Julia is a highly regarded marine scientist and a adjunct fellow at the University of Western Australia. She holds a doctorate in plastic pollution with over 15 years of experience leading R&D for universities, technology companies and foundations, including the Ocean Cleanup, the Australian Institute of Marine Science and the Mindaroo Foundation. Julia is also completing her MBA at UWA and has a PhD, Masters and Honours in Oceanography. I have to say, I think, Julia, you are one of the most highly experienced? No. What's the word when you have all the education?
Educated.
The most highly educated people we have had on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us on Your In Good Company.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me to participate.
So Julia, we always start our episodes in the same way and it's to get to know you. So firstly, what's your drink of choice?
My drink of choice? Beer, I would say. Pale ale. Pint of pale ale. I love it.
Very nice. And do you have a favorite book and why?
I love so many books. I think the one that I'm reading at the moment, I'm quite in love which is called Build. I don't know if you've heard about
it. I haven't heard of it.
Yeah, it's quite good. It has very good tips on building like hardware startups. It's from a guy that I used to work with in Apple and it was almost like the inventor of the iPod and then the iPhone. And yeah, it's some good tips in there.
I actually recently saw that the iPod, like the classic iPod, was selling for like $600 on eBay.
Yeah.
And I was like, I should have kept my iPod.
Yeah, it's
becoming sold it.
Yeah, it's coming around.
And do you have like an Instagram or a social media account that you really love that you think should be shared with people?
I think, we're going to talk a little bit about Ulu, my startup. And I guess if you want to know a little bit more about the kind of material they're developing, there is a group called GoPHA that provides quite good information and it's quite fun the way they do around this material they were producing. And I'm recommending checking it out.
Julia, you mentioned your startup there and I am very excited to get into it because it is quite amazing. Can you break it down for us? What does Ulu do in simple terms?
Yes, well, Ulu was born around the realization that the market is still missing a truly compelling alternative to fossil plastic. So, you know, we have this material that we have this love-hating relationship that is made with fossil fuels. It's creating a lot of persistent pollution within our own bodies and also in the environment and the oceans. And yeah, after studying that problem for a long time, I realized that I'm a strong believer that the alternative to that fossil plastic will come out of a material that's made with, on the feedstock side, with seaweed, which is a farmed plant that we farm in the ocean, that we actually want a future with more of. It's a feedstock that's actually good if we can scale. And then on material side, replacing plastic with a special kind of natural material. It's natural, like cotton and silk and paper, but it has that special power of delivering those things that we love about plastic. It's lightweight, it's waterproof, protects your food. So basically, in a nutshell, Ulu is a startup that's developing a PHA, which is a plastic alternative, using seaweed as the feedstock. So that's what we focus on.
I'm so curious, what is, like, I guess, the main differentiator between normal plastics and then the plastic you're talking about? Like, is it biodegradable or is it better with recycling? Like, what's the biggest advantage?
Yes, I think one of them is to really empower us to create a future that's truly decoupled from fossil fuels. I guess we want to leave the fossil fuels on the ground. On the energy front, we do have renewable alternatives. On the plastic one, we need one. So in terms of Ulu, we believe that we can do that by using seaweed. And then on the material side, if you look at our materials, which I have some demo objects that I can pick up.
Love that.
but basically, it delivers the things we like, but it gives us the option to either reuse an item, recycle the item, and most importantly, compost it. So if there is no recycling infrastructure around you, you can actually chop it up together with your food waste and compost at home or an industrial compost. So it allows you to, at the end of their life, to be able to bring, to put it back on the soil in a healthy way. So it's compostable.
Wow. Yeah. Very interesting.
Very cool. Where does the name Ulu come from? Does it have a meaning?
Yeah, so my co-founder, Michael, and myself, we were looking for a word that doesn't have a meaning yet, that we could bring a meaning to the world. So we were like playing with words, and I guess he's a surfer and he loves Uluwatu in Indonesia.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of inspired him into the Ulu word, but it's a word that didn't exist before. So now if you type Ulu on Google, we're going to show up first. So it's good.
Smart.
It's like something unique that we can build on.
Yeah, I guess it's like Uber, like all the big companies. Yeah. Have those names that, but there's so many companies that the name has become so synonymous with the brand.
Yes.
And now you can do the same. I love it.
So you're solving, like, what seems to be an impossible task. I mean, everyone obviously wants a world with less fossil fuels and better plastics. And you're doing that with your company. What was it like the first conversation of, like, all right, we're going to tackle this huge issue?
Yes, I think, like, by background, so I'm originally from Brazil and I studied oceanography in there.
Actually, I didn't even know it was a thing.
It's like it's all about studying the oceans, both like the currents and the waves, but also the chemistry of it and the marine wildlife, which is what I was studying. And so I guess I started by studying the problem, you know, back in 2002, so it's been a while, and looking at all these animals with lots of plastic inside them, decided to move to Australia in 2009 to learn English, but also got a scholarship to do a PhD in ocean plastic pollution. But then you start to get quite depressed and, like, just study the symptoms of the problem. So when I finished my PhD back in 2015, I decided to leave academia and try to look at pragmatic solutions to the problem. So the first job I got was in the Netherlands with a non-for-profit called The Ocean Cleanup, which was all about, and it's still quite thriving. When I started, it was just me and the founder, but now I think they have like 60 people.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's all about removing rubbish from oceans and rivers. And I love that one, but I was like, okay, I need to go more to the source because I still felt that we're kind of, you know, battling with the systems.
I guess you're reactive when you're removing it,
The symptom of the problem, just getting all that rubbish out.
Yeah.
So then I decided to come back to Australia, got a job at Mindaru, which is a family office, and work with the investors there on the impact investment team. And got this opportunity to look at lots of businesses tackling plastic pollution from different angles, and notice that it's still having that. Yeah, we still didn't have a compelling alternative to plastic. You know, if let's say most of the bioplastics out there, they made with land crops, so things like corn, for instance. But if we were to have a lot more corn in the world to replace fossil fuels with, you end up with other externalities. So you might end up with affecting the price of food, or end up with more deforestation and all those things. So yeah, through that work, I think, yeah, after 15 years of studying things, like come up with this solution that I truly believe in, on using seaweed and then this fantastic group of polymers called PHAs and putting them together. So I think it was, after a lot of study, and I think it was early 2020 that I decided to leave my jobs and then look for a co-founder with complementary skills. So Michael is more on the finance side, and kind of did my successful pitch with him, and we spent 1 year working like part-time to pay the bills and part-time on this, just to see if we wanted to dedicate our lives to it. So there was, 12 months of lots of deep thoughts on turning idea into a business model. And then early 2021, we got a bit of a pre-seed round done. And that was enough for us to go to a lab in February 2021, get our first hire in, and demonstrate a bench scale that we can do it. And then late last year, we did our seed round, so we raised $8.6
million. Wow, congratulations.
Yes, there's a lot to go, but that helped us scale. So now we're not working only on the bench, but we have a small pilot plant in Perth that is producing like kilos of these materials and are allowing us to work with prospective customers that are keen to try our materials and look towards replacing the plastic with Ulu. So working towards offtake of that material. Yeah.
We've spoken to a lot of founders over the last couple of months, and they often talk about that moment that they decide to take the business full time and what that feeling feels like when, you're torn in multiple different directions, and you hit that point where you decide that this is just something that you have to do and you're sort of ready to go. Can you tell us a bit more what that experience was like for you and your co-founder, Michael?
Yeah, I think in 2020, I was like, okay, we have this idea, let's have a look. And I think for us, it took a while, we took 12 months to kind of convince ourselves that we okay, let's embark into this, jump into that entrepreneurship journey. But then I think once you jump there, then it takes a lot of grit and belief and being able to this is the mission, and there will be failures but successes, and see things like as I stare. So I think something that we have a lot of is grit, and we look at each other on that. I think for those considering that, for me, I think it was key to have a co-founder as well, because sometimes I'm going crazy, but then you can at least look at each other and say, okay, no, we're not crazy, let's go. And
so for now, every other day.
Why seaweed? Because I have a friend of mine who has invested in a seaweed farm, I think in Tasmania, and they just sing its praises and talk about all these incredible things that it can do. Like if you feed it to cows will produce less
methane?
CO2, methane in their daily activities. And I'm just like, if it's such a magical thing underwater, beautiful little plant, I'm thinking of
also
a little mermaid.
Also good for sushi.
Why aren't we using it more? Firstly, what does seaweed do? And then I guess why aren't we using it more?
Yes, in Southeast Asia, we use a bit of that. Depends on the report you read, but it's about a few tens of, 20 million tons per year of seaweed, more or less, that we produce in the world. So there is a bit of a market. And I think now that we have this push towards a cleaner future, we believe a lot on seaweed, because seaweed is, we need a biomass that grows fast and has create little damage on the process as you farm. So for you to grow seaweed, you just need seawater and sunlight. So you put some ropes in the ocean, little baby seaweeds on it, you wait 45 days, they grow, you go there, you kind of chop it up a bit, leave a little piece, and it grows again. So it's quite straightforward, and you don't need, let's say if you're doing corn or sugarcane, you need fertilizer, you need fresh water, you need land. So it's a feedstock that you can grow under a low amount of input. And then on top of that, it also very good for the health of our oceans. The first thing that seaweed does, it grows very fast. And as it grows, it can take two things out of the environment. One is carbon. It's very good at getting carbon pollution out of the environment. So it really tackles climate change that way by removing carbon from the ocean and therefore from the atmosphere. Yeah, wow. And then the second thing is it sucks up a lot of nitrogen as well. So one problem we got in the ocean is that we're flushing it with sewage and fertilizer. So there is an excess of nutrient going to our ocean that is not good for the animals that live there and the fisheries and all that. And one way to mitigate that is by having more seaweed or marine plants in the ocean. So by farming that, you can, you know, tackle climate change and also improve the health of our oceans. So as an ocean scientist, I like to be working in a business like Ulu because we're creating demand and hopefully we're going to see a growth on that market that already exists in countries such as China, Japan, and Indonesia. But I think by creating that demand, hopefully we're going to see that market growing and coming to Australia as well and other countries. Yeah.
It's incredible. So cool. It sounds amazing. Where are you along the process of sort of developing this? And when you're thinking about that, who are your sort of customers that you're targeting, or what's the next steps in the business?
Technically, we can replace a wide range of plastics, but we still have a premium associated with our prices. So the markets that we are targeting at the moment, it's luxury packaging, so packaging for cosmetics, and the other one is fashion. So we're doing a lot of developing a fiber. I don't know if you know, but like about 60% of our clothing nowadays are made of plastic, like this one, you know. Oh. So creating a fiber that deliver those things that we love about plastic clothing, like it's waterproof, it's outdoors and all, but without creating this fiber that persists like inside my lung, or when you wash that clothes, it goes to down the drain. So in terms of prospective customers, we are looking at those two markets to entry, luxury packaging, so basically the tubes that the creams come in, and also put a lot of effort into our R&D of a fiber that is natural, yet deliver those things that we like about polyester clothes.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like a great place to start and target market, but I guess the opportunities are endless, right? Like you said, there's plastic everywhere and we use it in almost everything. So hopefully Ulu can grow and then it can replace all plastics.
Yes. And I think like that was the ambition on like creating, you know, a strategy that we believe can be scaled on the years or even decades to come in terms of, you know, finding that feedstock and finding the material that truly can, you know, replace fossil plastic at scale. Like I used to go to the New York to advise the UN on their SDGs. Plans and things when
done?
I was more like an academic, you know, and they said, let's give a hard time on plastic. Maybe we work with tax or tariffs or something to put that fossil plastic price up. But there was a concern, is like if we do that, then maybe other kind of material are gonna grow and we create deforestation or food price competition. So coming up with a material that actually is a true alternative to fossil plastic that's not gonna create other concerns are quite important, even from a policy making perspective around stop subsidizing fossil plastic and letting materials that are truly sustainable scale. Yeah. So I think that's, our ambition is to be able to really penetrate that 500, we produce a lot of plastic, 500 million tons a year. So
speaking of policies, like what are Australian policies surrounding like plastic consumption and plastic exportation, et cetera? Like, are we on the right track to adopting these kind of technologies like yours, or have we got a long way to go?
I've seen a massive progress since like when I landed in Australia in 2009. As a planet and also in Australia, like most of the consumers, normal people, if you'd say, I work with plastic pollution, it's like, oh, what are you talking about? Nobody, you know, there was no awareness within everyday people or governments or businesses. And I think now we got a very good momentum and you're seeing some change. Of course, there's a lot more. We need to accelerate that change. But the dialogue is there. And that is in Australia. But also, we're even looking at UN is having discussions on creating a binding instrument that allows the countries to have targets and so forth. And you see Australia Australia and investing more in circular economy and having better recycling in place and all that. So I'm optimist. There is lots to be fixed, but we're seeing progress in our fronts. Also, like the brands that we're talking with, they are keen to dialogue. They are supporting us, even though we're very early stage, you see their willingness to change. So I think, on those 15 years that I've been involved on that space, it's amazing what we achieved. And of course, we need to keep accelerating that, but I'm more optimistic to see a better future.
Well, we're an island, so we've got a lot of water to grow the seaweed.
Yes, exactly.
A lot of coasts.
Yes.
It does feel like there's been a big groundswell over the last few years as well around more sort of sustainable options, and people care a lot more about this stuff, both in investing and also in what they're buying day to day. One of the biggest problems that you did touch on earlier is that price point initially, right? When you're trying to build this stuff, it is going to cost more. Is it the kind of thing, do you think, that as you grow and as you scale, are those costs going to come down?
Yes, we have a roadmap for that. Yeah. And what I'm hoping to see on that space that Ulu operates in, and we hope to be at the forefront of that. But, a few decades ago, we saw renewable energy price going down. And, now we have alternatives to fossil energy.
Yeah,
and it's more about, getting in there. And I think in terms of replacing fossil materials with renewable materials, we're seeing, that production cost going down. And I think Ulu, I believe that by investing in better seaweed farming, is like a feedstock that's so cheap to farm. Like you have, Indonesia, people even below the poverty line, just get some ropes you put in the water and you get the feedstock. So we believe in that by putting seaweed and some innovations in our production process, that we can put the production cost down over time. So we have a clear roadmap to get there. And there's lots of R&D that needs to... that we need to do, but we are optimistic that we can compete on price in a few years from now.
And you said that you want to be at the forefront of this all. What does the competitive landscape look like in Australia? I mean, particularly you're in that kind of renewable, reusable space. Do you find it's quite collaborative, or do you have is there competition in terms of you want to be the front runner compared to other people?
I would like to say that we are doing differently from the old industry. I think we dialogue a lot. We have consortiums like the one that I spoke about to check it out. Go PHA is a consortium of our PHA producers around the world getting together and realizing that there is a lot of work to be done with the governments. For instance, for our materials to scale well, we need councils to be investing in composting facilities, right? Mm. So you have a bin at home that's a composting bin where you can put your food and your PHA in, and then the government can come chop it up and do a nice compost. So there is a lot of work that needs to be done around the technology, because technology alone is not going to be enough. So I think, at least Ulu, the way we see is let's dialogue with others trying to do good, because if you look at the size of the market, and we're so small about it, we need to join our force and make sure that us and the ecosystem grow, because we're trying to kill here, let's say, is the petrochemicals that produce those plastic pellets, out of oil and gas, and that's where, 99% of the market is. We are 1% of the market, those biomaterials. I would like to see that we are doing differently and we are highly collaborative and dialoguing and
Helps when you have a community to help support and ask questions too. We know that in the finance space.
Absolutely. You touched on before the capital raise that you did, was it $10 million?
So we raised 9.6 Australian dollars,
Amazing. Yeah. Was that something that you had experience doing before, and how was that process?
Yeah, I've been learning on the journey. So I think having Michael, a co-founder, really help on that side of the business, because he comes from a finance background. But for me, I'm learning a bit on the go. So our pre-seed round was in a safe note. So it was not a vesting round, and then the seed one, just learning as we go around pitching and creating the network of investors that are there for the long run and are interested in investing in businesses that has the potential for profits, but also potential for impact at scale. So that's the type of investor that we're working with, what's called impact investment, where, you have your board meeting and you report not only on your financials, but also your KPIs on own impact.
Yeah, and I think that impact investor category is really growing. We spoke to a founder, Natasia, who founded a brand called Conserving Beauty.
Oh, yeah, I know her.
The waterless beauty brand. Yeah. And she was saying the same thing, that they have really surrounded themselves around impact investors. And yes, it's obviously about profit to some extent, but really you have this incredible community of people that really are focused on making a difference in their realm of expertise. You know, you're talking about seaweed, you're talking about water. I mean, I guess they go hand in hand.
Yeah.
But I feel like, as Maddie said before, there really has been this surge of people talking about and engaging with renewable, recyclable, sustainable products.
Yes, yes. I know that business quite well because we have an investor in common called Alberts. That's an impact investment family office. But also, like, we love the packaging, the yellow packaging.
Yeah.
And we're trying to do the leads. We'll see.
Oh,
so
amazing.
We're doing some prototyping together as well, which is cool because she's on the luxury packaging. So.
Yeah, well, I actually went and bought all their products after we interviewed her, and I'm obsessed.
That's so cool. Good.
They're amazing.
Yes.
With the money that you raised, have you allocated that money to certain aspects of the business or certain things that you want to do with it? Would you be able to shed some light on where that money's sort of going?
Yeah. So before the capital, we were working like tiny scale on the bench, which allows you to do what's called bioprocess optimization. So really like decreasing the amount of seaweed that you need per kilo material that you produce. So you can do a lot of that bioprocess optimization. But then with this new capital, we were able to build a pilot plant that then scale up that process to like a kilo's scale. So we're producing about 1 kilo of our material per week. And that's necessary to do product development. So like start to do the little pellets for different markets and also send those pellets, which is our product really, to the brands for them to do manufacturing trials. So most of the capital went on to building that pilot plant that we have now, but also in hiring more. So now we're like 17 people.
Wow. 17.
So mostly scientists and engineers.
Yeah.
So yeah, a bit went on that as well. I'm making our R&D team strong and keep breaking through things.
Incredible.
Mm.
Got to dedicate that money to that research. So we are going to be speaking with you, or we're going to be watching you speak at a Vogue Codes event that's in Sydney this weekend. Can you tell us about some of the work that you're doing with Vogue Codes?
Yeah, so we're in dialogue. They are very like keen to follow the journey, particularly because we are on their fashion space, and they are just as passionate as us on creating more sustainable products for fashion. So yeah, it's good to be networking with them, and so good to have organizations like them that help us spread the word about our mission, because it's very important to bring everybody with us on the journey. It's not only about Ulu, but the ecosystem around it. So we're very lucky to be able to participate.
We saw that the event sold out, so.
I know, I was going to spruik and say, can you give us a sneak peek for if anyone wants to come and listen, but I guess too late. Coming to the end of our chat now, I want to take you sort of back to when you first were starting, I guess, Ulu or any one of the sort of businesses that you've worked in over time. And knowing what you know now, if you could tell your previous self something about starting a business, what advice would you give them?
I think it's just to ensure that even on the hard times, there are always small wins. So for myself, it's just to make sure that you brief and you take your breaks and you go for your run or whatever it is that you need to relax and have fun on the process and learn to. I think now I'm so much better at seeing, like, let's say, okay, I want to replace plastic at scale. It's like massive. But it like create the imaginary steps that you have those daily wins, the weekly wins, the monthly wins, and make sure that you celebrate those with yourself and your team. So you create that culture of, being able to sprint, but at the same time relax, so you can have a second very good sprint. And I think that's one thing that I would tell myself, because I think I got better at that. At the beginning, it's just like, let's go. And it's like, that is a problem. And you like focus on the problem. And sometimes it's better to leave the problem there, take a break, come back and tackle that problem. And if you have a victory, if you're always looking at the next one, you don't take the time to celebrate, you end up being burned out. So I think it's very important to thinking steps, take your time to celebrate the big wins, and remember the failures, they are there, they can wait a little bit, get your brief, go for whatever hobby you have and come back and they're going to be solvable.
I mean, especially when you're solving a mission like yours. Yeah. I can imagine that. And it's so, I mean, you must just wake up every day and like be so excited about what you're able to achieve at work. But I can imagine that, you know, when you do have those harder times, it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it requires a lot of persistency, but having such an awesome mission, I think is something that, you know, I always jump in the morning. It's like, oh, great, so lucky,
yeah.
You know, to have such an awesome mission with a fantastic team, everybody so vested in to make it happen. And yeah, it's just very special, yes.
I also love that advice because it's telling people to be present because I so agree. Just we can get so caught up in day to day doing your job and then like you just forget that this whole process is a bit of a journey. And so
well,
I
your
like
life
that.
Is the process.
Mm, yes. Yeah.
Okay, let's get deep and meaningful.
It's a journey, isn't it? Yeah. It's all that's about.
It's so. A journey.
So our final question for you, which we love, imagine you were sitting here in 10 years' time, what would be a successful Ulu for you?
I think our successful Ulu story will be one where we have tangible impact on the ground and we are delivering on this dream of having some products on the market that are now made with Ulu. And rather than doing some bad things to the world, it's actually being good for the world. We have this dream of having something that we can scale and the more of, the better for the world.
Yeah.
So having a material in the market that's replacing plastic at scale while removing carbon from the environment, so helping us tackle climate change and also cleaning up our oceans and empowering a lot of people on the ground. You know, one bit that we didn't speak about, but the farmers on the ground in places like Indonesia, 65% of them are female.
Wow.
So there's lots around, female empowerment as well, which, yeah, it would be awesome to be in a few years having lots of ladies working with us and then seeing all those good things happening as we scale.
Well, hopefully Ulu can be as
a
big
verb.
As Uber.
Yeah, yeah. To Ulu.
That's it.
To Ulu.
Fingers crossed.
Well, Julia, thank you so much for joining us today. It's an incredible story. It's super inspiring. And I'm just so glad that there are people in the world like you with your skills and knowledge and you're putting it to work in for a really incredible cause. We're super excited to see you this weekend speak at the Vogue Codes conference. So we will see you there. But in the meantime, if anyone would like to know more about Ulu or read more about the mission and what you're doing, where can they head?
I would say head to our website or our social media channels. Through the website, there are forms there that you can reach out to us and we're always very responsive and we're always looking for connecting with as many people as possible. So I also thank you guys from this initiative because for us it's very important to spread the message and connect with a lot of people. So thank you for your awesome job as well, which is very important.
No, of course. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank
this
you.
Evening. As we said in the intro, do you feel crap about your job?
We don't. Love our jobs. That
Love
was
you.
Such a fun episode. A big thank you to Julia. Highly recommend you go and read more and learn more about Ulu. Honestly, we had so much fun researching for this episode and then being able to chat to Julia today.
And if you want to hear more chats like this, then also follow us, follow, subscribe, and join us on our social media channels. Maddie, what are they?
At YIGC Podcast for TikTok and Instagram and YIGC Investing Podcast Discussion Group on Facebook.
Share it with a friend and we will catch you next week.
Catch you then.
You have been listening to an Equity Mates Media production. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. This podcast is intended for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general advice only and has not taken into account your personal financial circumstances, needs or objectives. Before acting on general advice, you should consider if it is relevant to your needs and read the relevant product disclosure statement. And if you're unsure, please speak to a financial professional. The hosts of this podcast and their guests may have positions in the companies mentioned. Equity Mates Media operates under an Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.